U.S.-Iran war rolls into day 25 with no end in sight. Though there are people trying to get it to an end, there are rumors that there are diplomatic overtures coming from Iran. There are rumors there are diplomatic overtures coming from the United States. And meanwhile, everything continues to battle out on the ground. Missiles keep flying in both directions. Things get getting blown up, but we don't seem to be any closer to an end. And that most important thing, the Strait of Hormuz continues to be closed. Just trying to figure out what all this is going. We have back with us today, Jim Jatras, who is, of course, a former diplomat, former U.S. diplomat, GOP Senate Foreign Policy Advisor. And there you can see his ex-post account at Jim Jatras. Always follow him there. Jim, let's look off, first of all, because there's a lot of confusion. Actually, this the first thing here, CNN is reporting just a few minutes ago, that it turns out that they're saying that the Iranian sources have said that there has been U.S. outreach and that Tehran is willing to listen. The proposals being looked at are aimed not merely at achieving a ceasefire, but a concrete agreement to end the conflict between the U.S. and Iran, they have added. Now, there's lots of conflicting information here. We're going to get to some of the conflicts on the U.S. side in a minute, but the majority of statements out of the Western media, certainly that in the United States, has been that it's that the Iranians have been reaching out. In fact, President Trump yesterday said, no, hadn't been us. They called me. They're begging for a negotiated settlement. What do you make of the contradictions here?
Well, several things. I mean, first is a question, as you asked, who called who? I mean, you know, who's reaching out? Who's desperate for a deal? And it seems to me that it's obviously the U.S. side. I don't see any circumstances where the Iranians would be reaching out, because remember, they have ruled out a ceasefire. They insist, sort of like the Russians do in Ukraine, that this has to be a comprehensive deal. But they face the same problem, that any deal they make with the United States is likely to be another deception, a bunch of commitments that will not be kept by the U.S. side. So I don't know that they would put much stock in that. The other thing, the first thing occurs to me when I hear this, Daniel, is when was the last time the Iranians thought they were making progress on a negotiation with the United States? It was on February 28th when we attacked them. Let's remember, you know, Trump announced at the beginning of the weekend that he was going to give them 48 hours to reopen the strait, or we're going to pound the stuffing out of them. And then he pulled back from that. Frankly, I don't think he had any intention of following through with that. Instead, he comes out with his five-day extension now, aside from any profit-taking that went on during that time. I think he's probably setting them up for some sort of another escalation, another attack, maybe something on the ground. We've been talking last few days about the assembly of this Marine Expeditionary Unit in the region and what their possible target might be. Frankly, my first thought when I heard this, this is another deception. This is another attempt to try to lull the Iranians. I don't think it's going to work, but lull the Iranians into a sense that, oh, we can talk now. We can negotiate about the fundamental question of this war, not just the ceasefire. Frankly, I don't think this is in good faith from the U.S. side. I think it's another setup. That's the first thing that occurs to me. And the other thing, of course, is, you know, we look back at the Venezuelan operation with Maduro. What was the key to the success of that? The key of that was we suborned the Venezuelan leadership. You know, we obviously made a deal with Delcy Rodriguez to give her boss the heave-ho while so she could take power. Is it possible we're trying to suborn some elements of the Iranian leadership and get them to basically break with the rest of the government and talk with us, maybe as a possible successor to the current arrangement with the new Ayatollah and President Pezeshkian? It's possible. I don't think that's going to work either, but I suspect that there are people from MI6 and CIA and the Mossad spreading a lot of money around and trying to find somebody somewhere that we could ease into power as the new leadership. So I think there are probably several elements to that. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, though.
And let's take a look at the Iranian side, first of all, because there are certainly a lot in the Western media, in the U.S. media in particular, over the last 24 hours, both last night and today, that are saying, yeah, you know what? The reason why Iran's willing to talk right now is because President Trump put that kibosh, that 48-hour threat on them, and they realized he meant it. And at the end of that 48 hours, he was going to come in with a hammer. And lo and behold, is the way one person put it, now they're willing to talk on negotiations. Has enough bombs dropped on Iran? Have enough of their planes been hit, boats been blown up, etc., that would make them say, okay, I know we said last last week that there would be no ceasefire. We're going to hold this out, that maybe the pain has been enough that they are willing to come to the table.
Daniel, what are you talking about? Have you been listening to President Trump and the administration? We wiped them out in the first hours. We already won this war. It's all over. But the shooting, I guess. I mean, I don't think the Iranians seem to have gotten the memo that it's all over and that we've already won. So I don't think, I don't think they took that threat seriously. That we're clearly hitting them with everything we have to try to knock out their leadership. I mean, after all, we killed the Supreme Leader, for crying out loud. And we're taking out what other elements of their leadership we can. We claim we've destroyed all of their launch capability, although that's clearly not true. So I don't know what it is in our threat that they would take seriously. Oh, well, they're going to get really tough with us now. I think we've been as tough with them as we could be in this opening round. And we thought we could knock them out at the beginning. That didn't happen. I don't think further threats impressed them at all.
Yeah, let me ask you, in terms of, really, to me, this kind of comes, this whole conflict really comes down to a test of wills. Who has the ability to suffer longer? Is it the Iranian side or is it the American / Israeli side? And I think between the Israeli and American side, you know, the two sides of that coin, I would imagine that the Israelis are able to suffer more than Trump. But the question is, can Trump suffer more economically and therefore politically at home, or can the Iranian side suffer? I wonder if you could just kind of give me from your background or knowledge on the diplomatic realm, how Iran effectively endured and suffered during the 8 years of the Iran-Iraq war that we helped the Iraqi side fight against them. What does that tell you about their willingness to suffer now after nearly 4 weeks?
Well, I think to ask the question is to answer. We know how many hundreds of thousands of men they lost during that war, including by chemical weapons that we supplied to Saddam Hussein. So clearly their level that they can take punishment is very, very high. The Israelis, as you say, is certainly higher than that of the United States. You know, at this point, it looks like the Iranians can strike Israel with impunity. I think it's just a matter of their strategy where the Iranians decide which targets they want to strike and when. I mean, especially with their strike a few days ago at the Dimona nuclear plant without evidently targeting the reactor itself. I think they sent a calling card. They're saying, if we want to destroy that reactor, we can do it. That would probably be, you know, again, I don't know necessarily the physics of all this, but I think that would be something close to a dirty bomb effect if you blew up that reactor and presumably spread nuclear nuclear contamination all over Israel. I think the Iranians might do that if they felt they had to reach that point. But as you point out, what was Trump's threat? Reopen the Strait of Hormuz, which, by the way, he's also saying is still open. So I'm not quite exactly sure what his message is there. Yeah, that's where the economic damage is going to happen, especially if there is a stepping up of the attacks on energy infrastructure in both countries. You know, glass houses, the Gulf countries are a lot more vulnerable to that than the Iranians are. And that's true of things like desalination plants and other things, that the amount of punishment the Iranians can inflict that will have long-term consequences for the global economy is much higher than I think there's anything we can do to them short of dropping nuclear weapons on them.
And, you know, you mentioned that the implication that the Iranians have been all but defeated, and you mentioned over the weekend the strikes in Dimona and Arad, which I think caused 50 and 80 wounded in each. Miraculously, no civilians were killed in that. But then this is live information here from the New York Times. Talks about Iran war live updates. Tehran fires new barrages against Tel Aviv. So these are attacks in Tel Aviv. So it looks to me like every day the Iranian side is firing more missiles into Israel and to our allies in the region against our targets. Apparently, we are now up to around 240 wounded in action and 13 killed on the U.S. side. That keeps growing. Meanwhile, you have a lot of people in the United States. There was some on Fox News last night that kept saying, hey, you know what? 94% of all the missiles fired by Iran get intercepted and all of ours get through. So this is practically wrapped up. And yet there you saw the graphic evidence in a daylight on the third straight day of attacks. So what does that tell you about what President Trump is saying, that they're all but defeated?
Baghdad Bob lives, I guess. I mean, make these claims, and can anybody take them seriously? Look, you know that the Patriot and the THAAD systems aren't really all that great anyway, even when they have the, you know, plenty of interceptors to launch. By all accounts, that's getting near the stage of exhaustion. I don't see how anybody can claim with a straight face that we are knocking down the vast majority of the weapons that they launch against Israel and against our forces. It looks like right now they're concentrating more on Israel than they are against our forces. And maybe that's just because the targets aren't there at the moment, or maybe this is a part of the planned calculation that they have. I have to honestly say, I don't know exactly what the Iranian endgame is. I mean, again, if they're refusing a ceasefire, maybe they're saying, sure, if you want to tell us something, we're willing to listen. But I don't think these are serious negotiations by any means. And I think they understand there is no serious negotiation with the United States, because whatever we tell them is going to be lies.
Well, that therein is your real problem. President Trump doesn't seem to understand that, because here's what he said on the negotiations recently.
Ministry says you're not telling the truth when it comes to productive conversations to end the war.
Well, they're going to have to get themselves better public relations people. We have had very, very strong talks. We'll see where they lead. We have major points of agreement. I would say almost all points of agreement. Perhaps that hasn't been conveyed. The communication, as you know, has been blown to pieces. They're unable to talk to each other. But we've had very strong talks. Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner had them. They went, I would say, perfectly. I would say that if they carry through with that, it'll end that problem, that conflict. And I think it'll end it very, very substantially.
You know, and I just let's just take it at face value here. He says, again, Witkoff and Kushner, the claim is that's who's been conducting these secret negotiations that led President Trump allegedly to postpone his 48-hour deadline, which would have expired last night. And one would ask the reasonable question, since it was Witkoff in particular that led the negotiations you mentioned that preceded the start of this war, and that by all accounts, both from Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi as well as the Omani Foreign Minister, who said that enormous concessions had been made in that last session, the third session, on the night of the 26th of February, and then we blew that off again, as you also pointed out. Why now would the Iranians hold any kind of credibility to the guy that just turned them upside down and then lied incredibly about it, at least according to the Iranian side, about what was discussed in the last round?
I'll tell you, Daniel, I hate to say it, but I think when you do clips to President Trump from now on, you're going to have to start doing the Jack Keane siren to introduce whatever he says, because it's just totally unbelievable. And yet you're right. I mean, Witkoff and Kushner, why would anybody, and not just the Iranians, but the Russians, talk to these two characters anymore? I mean, it's just patently clear that they're there in order to deceive, to obfuscate, and to basically set you up for an attack. And look, even if the Iranians are saying, sure, we're willing to listen to any proposals, if they're actually allowing these two guys to be the messengers, they really need to get their head examined. I mean, that they early on, the Russians said, we're not going to talk to Keith Kellogg anymore. And it seems to me that not only Moscow, but Tehran would be entirely within their rights to say, look, we're willing to listen, but not these two guys. We don't want to see their faces anymore. We don't want to hear their names. We don't care what they have to say. We know what their game is about. So I think that we're just getting into the realm of just not just a delusion, but surrealism here when we talk about what the possible end of this war is going to be, aside from are calling it quits and crawling away with our tail between our legs before any more Americans get killed and before the world economy is destroyed any more than it is. I just don't see that happening right now, because I don't think Trump can do it. You know, he's got to be the winner all the time. He's got to have the plausible outcome. What common ground can there be when he's already said the only acceptable outcome of this war is unconditional surrender? And now I understand what he says one day, the next probably, you know, he just sort of dropped down the memory hole what he said yesterday or the day before. But that is, I think, inadvertently, maybe a word of truth. He did speak that, yes, the Iranians have to surrender. They have to prostrate themselves in front of the United States. They have to agree to regime change, whatever it's going to be. I don't think they're going to do that. Once that is on the table as the only possible outcome, what is there to talk about anymore?
Well, and that leads to the question is, what is the outcome we desire? Because it could well be that we, by saying unconditional surrender before and not explicitly taking that off the table, though it has modified several times since then, and by having C. Witkoff, one may reasonably ask the question, are we trying to set up a situation where negotiations fail again, ostensibly? And then what is the purpose of that? Now, this channel, by the way, we formed it, Gary and I, because we were sick and tired of mainstream media, because we only got one view and it was heavily, heavily slanted. That's only gotten worse since we started this channel. And we are going to remain unintimidated and uncompromised to bring the truth. But it's important from time to time to show what is being said there, because this is what a majority numerically of the American public hear. Here's how the negotiations, despite what you and I have been talking about, which is an accurate assessment, here is what Brit Hume, who used to be a respected journalist at Fox News, says about these negotiations.
It's true that there's some negotiations going on. The question that faces the administration, of course, is whether whoever they're talking to is really in charge. You know, there are all kinds of reports about dissension within the ranks in Iran. Statements get put out and retracted and so on. So that's question number one. And then, of course, question number two, obviously, is whether whatever deal can be struck is going to satisfy the president and indeed our Israeli allies. So there's some, you know, this is one of these situations where militarily, we've pretty well won this.
Oh, yeah, man. Militarily, this deal's off the table already. We're done. And you see, whether they use the words or not, his description is exactly what you said a second ago. It is still abject surrender on the Iranian side. So we'll listen to what they say, but it has to satisfy President Trump. It has to satisfy Benjamin Netanyahu. And yet militarily, I just showed you the scenes from bombing today and over the weekend. Where is the surrender on the Iranian side? And with that, the statement here, this seems to me, this is what I really like your view on, we're setting ourselves up and the population of America, because we want to just have a mentality. This is what we want to be true. So we're just going to say it. And so that people think it is. And that works for a while. It's even worked for 25 days. But Jim, that there's a time clock on that one. It's going to run out. And at some point, you're not going to be able to hide the fact that we're not winning. And that, in fact, that strait stays closed to our traffic. And the price of oil will probably after this Friday is going to probably start going back up again. Where is this going to lead?
Well, I think there's a combination of two things there. One is what Trump said earlier in that clip you had earlier about the Iranians need better PR. Well, absolutely right. I mean, with the United States government and its satellites and the media control world opinion to a great extent. I mean, we saw this during we've seen this all along for 4 years during the Ukraine war, that apparently they think they can win a war with PR, whereas the situation on the ground might be very, very different. So there's that. And I think, Daniel, I think we have to take into account the fact there are an awful lot of people out there who buy this. I mean, they watch Fox News or whichever channel it is, and they say, well, we say we're winning, so we must be winning, just like the Ukrainians have been winning for the last 4 years. At some point, reality is going to catch up with you. That's one reason I think that what this little roller coaster we've seen the last couple of days, first 48 hours, and then we're going to pound the stuffing out of you. Oh, now we're negotiating. The price of oil drops for about 10 bucks. And I'm sure somebody somewhere made an awful lot of money on that in anticipation that that would happen. And then now it's a 5-day deadline for these supposed negotiations to take place. The first thing I thought of is, yeah, isn't that about the time that these Marines are supposed to show up and be ready to be deployed to do whatever it is he has in mind? I think that's the game plan here. I think this is still a question that somehow we think if we just, you know, have this silver bullet, you know, the equivalent of all the, you know, Wunderwaffen that the Ukrainians keep saying they're going to have, that somehow we can have a lightning strike that really puts them out of business the way we claimed that we did in the first in the opening phase of this war that clearly didn't happen. I don't take anything these people say at face value. We've been lied to so many times, and I just look at it in terms of what's their tactical play here? What are they trying to accomplish by spinning these stories, and what is the reality on the ground that they hope to accomplish by using the propaganda cover?
Well, that is a question worth asking. I'm not sure we're going to get the answer to that. But, you know, whatever they may intend, I mean, there is going to come a point. And this five-day thing, it's got another short-term clock. President Trump put himself in a huge bind by saying 48 hours at the exact moment I said this, which would have been 7:44 p.m. last night. Mm-hmm. And now he's extended it about to 5 days. Okay, well, that still puts you at Friday. That's still a deadline that's rolling up pretty quick. And you're going to have to do something then, too. You can, I don't know, you can extend it again or something. But here's the problem, especially if it's what you suggested here, that's going to be exposed pretty quickly if it doesn't work. Now, one other, and we are going to give you a warning here. I don't want you to get PTSD. But Brother Jack Keane seems to agree with Brit Hume that we're winning.
There is no doubt in the minds of the military commanders of the IDF and the military commander, Admiral Bradley Cooper, of the Central Command, our military forces that are doing the striking against Iran, that we would accomplish these military goals, to include opening of the Straits of Hormuz. We would force that opening and keep it opening. But what's taking place here is, can, through diplomacy, can we accomplish the same end states that we're attempting to achieve through obviously attacking Iran? And that is, denude them of their ballistic missile capability, drones capability, of anything that where they can sustain attacks, take away their nuclear capability completely, and take away their future capability as well. And obviously open the Straits of Hormuz.
Yep.
Can we achieve that through diplomacy? I'm highly skeptical. Why? Because this is a regime for 47 years. They are pathological liars.
Right.
And they're cheaters.
I'm sorry. Who are the pathological liars again? I may have misunderstood that last part there. But look, this is just... I just wonder how long this fiction can go on. And you have historical precedents here. How long do you think this kind of fiction can sustain if you don't see it manufactured on the ground? And I'm going to talk about the potential ground force here in just a second. But just categorically, how long can you go on being Baghdad Bob, as you said a second ago, if you didn't translate into anything else, if that strait doesn't open up and the missiles do keep falling?
I don't think we know the answer to that. I'm trying to think of a historical parallel where things were this destructive of the global economy and potentially of the domestic U.S. economy. I don't know that there's a parallel where you could say, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 10 weeks, make a prediction like that. I think there's just too many variables here. I mean, unless, as I said earlier, we can suborn the Iranians domestically, or unless the Russians and the Chinese yank the rug out from the Iranians, it looks to me like they're in this for the long haul, that they've gained this out, and that, as we talked about earlier, they can take a lot more punishment than probably even the Israelis can, and certainly longer than the American consumer can, and certainly longer than President Trump can in terms of the political pickle he's gotten himself into. I can't help but wondering, by the way, why are these deadlines always occurring on Fridays? I just have this sense that there's this little cycle that's building up now where we're going to make various enunciations on Friday, and when the just in time for the markets to close, and then something big will happen on Monday, and somebody somewhere is making a killing every time we go through this cycle. I mean, we're talking about, you know, a level of corruption that would make Hunter Biden blush, but somebody's making a lot of money on this in the meantime.
Yeah, and we see it on the screen here. This is where President Trump made that statement. You see this just crash. And then, as is all over the news today, and Doug McGregor talked about earlier on our show today, $1.5 billion was bet in one place, and then several hundred million in another place. So somebody obviously knows what's going on with that. And you see that this change here. And so now here we are motoring on towards Friday. And Friday, there's something else is going to happen, Jim, one way or the other. Either there's not going to be an attack and the price could drop further, or there is going to be an attack and it could go through the roof. And the people who know what's coming can make money either way.
Yeah. Maybe he says something on Friday that caused the market to go way up. A lot of people then sell. And then they know whatever's going to be said on Monday. I mean, don't worry about it, Daniel. I'm sure Pam Bondi is all over it, that whoever the culprits are going to be brought to account.
That's one thing. If you can say anything about this administration, is that they are blind to justice. And no matter who you are, nobody's above the rule of law.
No question about it.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, about that. Now, but we, as you mentioned, though, one of the other possibilities for all this delay is just yet again another deception or attempted deception on the part of the administration to claim that there's some kind of negotiation when really they just need more military time. And you mentioned here about the Tripoli. That's apparently going to be fully in place on Friday. Then now we also, sorry, not that one. Then we also got information here that the 82nd Airborne Division has troops going into the region. Here, General Brandon Tegtmeyer, if I'm pronouncing that right, and his command element members of the headquarters staff have been ordered by the Pentagon to deploy to the Middle East or several thousand paratroopers with the 82nd Airborne Division Immediate Response Force prepared to deploy to the region a possible ground operation against Iran. They openly tell Fox News. Now, one would wonder, is this deception operations again? Is it psychological operations saying, hey, we got thousands of guys coming in and we're going to do something so that Iran doesn't know what's going to happen? And somehow, is this, do you think, maybe designed to put more pressure on them to have some sort of diplomatic agreement? Because I'm looking at this from just a military person who has combat experience, and I'm like, a few thousand airborne troops in a country of 93 million with the terrain like it is there, or two Marine MEUs. I mean, that's like a, it's a drop in the ocean. So it's not going to make any difference. Therefore, it's not going to put any pressure on Iran. So I doubt that anybody in the Pentagon or the White House actually thinks that, which worries me more, because then that might mean, no, they actually plan on doing something with them. What do you think about that aspect?
If I had to guess, I would say it's the latter. I think they have something in mind. I mean, we've heard a lot of talk about Harg Island. Obviously, that's a big problem because we can't get to it from coming up through the Gulf because we can't get into the Gulf. You know, I had speculated maybe we would try to assemble a force from the west in Kuwait or northern Saudi Arabia and launch it from there. That doesn't appear to be the way this MEU is coming in. It looks like it's coming in from the Indian Ocean. Now, I understand there are a couple of other islands closer to the Strait of Hormuz. Maybe those are the real targets. Maybe there's more than one target. Maybe they would even think about launching an attack on the Iranian mainland. But as Doug McGregor was pointing out, comparing it to the Gallipoli, the Gallipoli adventure of Winston Churchill. Yeah, that's not going to work out very well, I don't think, especially given this, the very small size of the force that we're talking about. The long and the short of it, if this is a bluff to try to scare the Iranians into capitulating, I don't see how it could possibly work. If I were the Iranians, I'd be saying to myself, yeah, please come, come in down on the deck where we get our hands on you. And because I think it's more of an enticement for the Iranians to hang tough rather than to throw in the towel.
So let me ask you from a diplomatic perspective. Let's say that for some reason there's the foolishness inside the combination of the White House and the Pentagon that they do try something, whether it's Harg Island, the ones in the horseshoe bend of the strait, or God forbid, if we should try and seize the reprocessed material, who knows where that may be inside the interior of Iran. I mean, that would make Jimmy Carter's attempt to rescue hostages pale in comparison to its failure. But what impact would that have on our allies, especially those Europeans that were and those in Asia were trying to coerce into come and help us out militarily? If they see American 82nd Airborne Division and U.S. Marines get cut to pieces in a bloodbath and utterly failed tactically, what is that going to do to our image and prestige? I'm talking about among our allies.
I think to ask the question is to answer it. I mean, it basically shows them that U.S. security guarantee is useless. Now, in the case of the Gulf states, I think they've already quite learned that, and they're not sure how to get out of this pickle either. As far as the Europeans go, I've never taken seriously the idea that in the post-Cold War era, the Europeans are really worried about their security. I mean, who's the threat to their security? Oh, the Russians. But I don't think the Russians are a threat to their security. And I think most of their leadership really knows that. I mean, the only threat to Europe's security are the vast hordes of migrants that are being invited in by the governments of these countries. And of course, NATO and the American alliance or American hegemony does nothing to retard that security threat, which is the only real security threat they face. But in terms of the emperor has no clothes, in terms of the perception of American power, yeah, I think that would have a devastating effect. And look, I'm going to get some criticism for this. the faster we can get to the point where the American global hegemony and our claim to be supreme over all over the world falls apart, I think the better off this country will be, and the more we'll have to go through the kind of reassessment of our whole national posture in a way that we've been putting off for decades, that we should have done after the end of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. I just want that to happen without a whole bunch of grunts getting the chop somewhere. Right. And I hate to think that we can't change course and decide, okay, fine, we're no longer in the global empire business without a whole bunch of Americans getting killed somewhere.
Yeah, obviously, I'm in complete agreement with that. It's anguishing to me to watch. And it's not even just the issue of the 82nd Airborne and the two Marine amphibious units. Mm-hmm. There's also some additional news here. One of the things that we have been noticing and been a little bit surprised about is the Hezbollah joined in finally, not at first, but they finally mm-hmm. have joined in, and they have now a number of rocket barrages that are in coordination with some of the Iranian missile strikes. But the Houthis have been notably absent until, and I think this video here was made a couple of days ago. I finally found it yesterday. But here is their newest warning that they may be ready to take action. سوف تستهدف سفنه وبوارجه في البحر الأحمر. Now, we dare not just ignore that just right mm-hmm. off the hand, because you see there's obviously the Strait of Hormuz there on the middle right side of that image I'm showing you on the screen here. But then on the south, the Bab al-Mandab, that is a big issue too, because if the Houthis are able to interdict that and to keep especially American traffic out, that's going to be a problem, because already Saudi Arabia is using that path to try and mitigate some of the problems of not being able to get through the Strait of Hormuz. How seriously do you think that this threat is, and what would be the implications if they take action on it?
I think it's a very serious threat. I mean, even before you showed the map, my first thought was, yeah, the Saudi pipeline across the peninsula, primarily to Yanbu, but I guess there are some other Red Sea ports as well. I think the Houthis could inflict to close the strait like this. You don't have to sink every ship that comes through or fire in every ship. You just have to show the capability that you can do it, and that it's prohibitive to buy insurance to try to get through there, and ship owners are not going to want to chance it. So that I think that closing the Bab al-Mandab is certainly doable by the Houthis. Remember, we saw this. This has been going on for a couple of years now. That the attempts to bring the Houthis down through American strikes, airstrikes on them, and missile strikes simply is not doing the job. Now, can some of these ships go north and go through the Suez Canal? I'm sure some of them can. I don't know how. This is a technical question. I don't know the answer to how big the tankers are. They can go through the Suez Canal, and whether that will, to what degree that will compensate for the closing of not only the Strait of Hormuz, but the Bab al-Mandab. The other question I have is, well, we know that the Houthis have missile capabilities that could reach all the way to Israel. I mean, if necessary, would they strike the Suez Canal? What if they shut the Suez Canal down? Wow. What does that do to the whole global economy?
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one, but I'm pretty sure that they are in range. Let's hope we don't get to that one, too. I was asking you what you think diplomatically about what some of these negative reactions militarily could have on our allies in Europe. But there's also, and you've mentioned a couple of times how the Russians are involved with this. For one of the first times in a long time, you had Sergei Lavrov actually publicly weighed in on this.
This year kicked off with a military invasion of the U.S. in Venezuela with dozens dead, the lawfully elected president abducted, taken away, smuggled out of the country. The military aggression of the U.S. and Israel against the Islamic of Iran has been going on for days, a situation that threatens to destabilize not only the situation around the Gulf, which has already happened, and the entire world trade as well, the world energy security, and world transport and business communications.
So what do you suppose the Russians are going to do about this? Do we hear what he says? Because he's like, look, this is not just the Iran mm-hmm. situation. I mean, you're starting off with you know, completely against any kind of what used to be international law. That now no longer exists, because we'll do whatever we have the military might to do. We are, as some experts in the United States called it, we are the lion of the jungle, and that's the only rule that we pay attention to. If that's the case, what does that mean for Russia?
Well, I think the Russians have been aware of the fact that there is no international law for some decades now. I mean, I don't think there's any mystery about that. The only virtue, if you can call it that, of the Trump administration is at least they've said the quiet part out loud. They've simply declared what Mr. Lavrov and a lot of other people have known to be the case for quite some time. The question is, what are the Russians doing about it, or what can or will they do about it? I think everybody understands they are providing support to the Iranians. I'm not sure they know to what end they are doing it. Do they really want to see a defeat of the United States in broad strategic terms, something that has a true global impact? Or is their inclination, as it has been in Ukraine, to be cautious and look for some kind of a deal, even though by now they should know that no deal is possible to be had? So I don't really know what their longer term plan with that is. One of the questions you have to ask, too, is aside from whatever they're doing with Iran, is are they going to step up or change or strengthen their program in Ukraine, taking advantage of the fact that the United States, we're kind of busy right now. And there's not much that we can do. We've depleted a lot of the weapons that we otherwise would be sending to the Ukrainians. Do they see an opportunity there, or will they also keep proceeding with caution as they have done up till now? I think that's a strategic question. And the guy who can answer that question is not Mr. Lavrov. It's his boss. And his inclination has always been toward caution. So I'm not really sure. But again, that could change. I believe it will change when I see it change. But I think the inclination of the Russians would be tried to, I hate to put it this way, but try to entertain the fantasy, as they have up till now, that somehow somebody in Washington will see the sweet light of reason and decide to come to some reasonable accommodation, not only with Iran, but with the Russians in Ukraine. As I've said earlier, I don't think that could happen, but we'll have to see.
Well, I couldn't help but pull this one up here. You mentioned if only we could see the sweet light of reason, that would be great, give you some optimism. But man, this is not giving me a lot of hope here, is that apparently President Trump is weighing options of how maybe the Iran's parliament speaker as a potential partner and even a future leader. Politico reported on Monday. Ghalibaf, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is seen as, at least by some of the White House, as a workable partner who could lead Iran and negotiate with the Trump administration in the war's next phase. So it seems as though they are genuinely in the White House, actually think that, like Dulcy Rodriguez in Venezuela, is that we're like, you know what, we'll select the next leader of Iran, and then they'll have a good deal with us. I mean, I would like you to answer this from two questions. First of all, let's look inside Iran. Let's just say hypothetically that we said, yeah, we want the parliamentary speaker. We think we can deal with him. Do you think, how would that play inside of Iran as far as you know?
Oh my gosh, Ghalibaf. My first inclination when I saw that was, okay, is this guy next on our kill list? I mean, we know that the Israelis have been targeting. Remember, they killed Larijani, who was supposed to be one of the less ideological, less hardline people in the Iranian leadership, that we understand the Israelis have been targeting places like cafes and others. We know that opposition figures hang out to make sure there is nobody more moderate that could come to power, assuming there's a collapse of the Iranian government. I suppose what's really going on here is it's possible we want to cast some shade on this guy so the Iranians will consider him a potential traitor and eliminate him. So I think there's some silly little propaganda game going on here. I can't imagine that this is made in good faith that, oh, yes, we can really deal with this guy. Why would you publicly identify him if that is what your goal is? So, they're just painting a target on his back. I guess the only question is, who's going to kill him first, the Iranians or us?
Well, in fact, you mentioned that Trump was trying to be coy yesterday. You may have seen this video.
Oh, yes, I did.
A top person. Don't forget, we've wiped out the leadership phase one, phase two, and largely phase three. But we're dealing with the man who I believe is the most respected and the leader. It's a little tough. They've wiped out We've wiped out everybody.
Is that the Supreme Leader?
No, not the Supreme Leader.
So
we don't.
Not much talk
well, nobody's ever. Nobody heard of the second Supreme Leader, the son.
Are these direct?
Nobody. We have not heard from the son. Every once in a while, you'll see a statement made, but we haven't. We don't know if he's living. But the people that seem to be running it, and they seem that based on really fact, because things they've said have taken place.
Mr. President,
again.
Mr. President, I know you've deployed.
I don't want him to be killed. Okay? I don't want him to be killed.
Mr. President.
Yeah, well, it kind of seems like maybe now they do when they've released it to Politico for crying out loud. But, you know, I'm just speculating here. Just wonder what your thoughts are. To what extent might the Iranians be baiting us to say, hey, you know, we're making you think that something's going to work here. And really all they're doing is stringing it out, because this is one of my theories here, is that the Iranian side knew long before that they knew, I won't say chose war, but when they chose not to make the kinds of concessions, the substantial concessions that might have prevented war, that they said there's a high, and this was in the New York Times actually, that they said there was higher risk in submitting to the U.S. than there was in a war. So they knew what was going to come. They've been preparing for this for decades, as you've told us on previous shows. And so the imagery would be that nothing that they've seen so far would be surprising, and none of the amount of ordnance that's been dropped has been surprising. And one would imagine that they had mentally been prepared to go many, many months, a half year, a year, 2 years, who knows what. So some claim that it's up to 2 or 3 years that they could go. But the question is then, is there any reasonable prospect that after 4 weeks, less than 4 weeks, that they're going to have miscalculated and all that ready to submit? Or are they trying to drag this out, wanting Trump to keep going along? Meanwhile, that clicker on the oil price, which is probably going to start going up north every day that strait stays closed, it's going to be a big risk. What do you think?
Well, unless we've inflicted a lot more damage than it appears to be the case, not only on their leadership, but also on their technical capabilities, particularly their missile launchers, which, again, as far as I can tell, it doesn't stop their ability to launch many, many drones, which have a devastating effect if there's no air defense that can shoot them down, which is increasingly the case. Unless that is the case, of course, they have every incentive to do that. You know, as I said earlier, I mean, they have to think about their end game, what they want from us, because if they enter into too strong a position or inflicting too much damage, particularly on Israel, I think they do have to face the prospect that they could be subject to a nuclear strike, possibly by us, but more likely by the Israelis. So I think they have to worry about, okay, fine, the strategy you outline makes a lot of sense for them, and I think that's exactly what they're doing. And maybe even designating this guy as, why don't you go talk to the Americans, or appear to be talking to them, and lead those idiots along, because they think they're splitting the regime. But as they proceed with, as you say, bringing down the global economy, and particularly at some point the American economy, and raising the prices here. Where does that get them at the end of the day? I hope they know what they think that outcome should be. Maybe they do and maybe they don't. I mean, look, Iranians, Arabs, Jews, Greeks, Armenians, you know, there are a lot of wily rug merchants lurking around the Middle East who like to play these very, very complicated games that maybe people in the West don't fully understand, in terms of how you manipulate personalities in a way that Americans and Western Europeans really don't quite comprehend. So I think there's all sorts of intrigue going on here that we're maybe just seeing the tip of the surface.
Well, that's, I guess, what we're going to find out. And I'm sorry, just as we're on here, I just have a note here from a source I have that claims to have direct access to deployed soldiers in the Middle East. And they say it looks like there will be an attack this weekend from special operations. Apparently, it has been greenlit. So we'll see what that's going to be. That's it could be Karg Island. It could be those islands in the horseshoe, or it could be an attempt to seize something. But it looks like we are going to find out what's going to happen. And that's the final question I'd like to ask you. If this information turns out to be correct, and based on open source reporting, we can see it with all the forces flowing in, that seems likely anyway. What is going to be happening? What's going to happen on the backside? What do you think the Iranian side does in response?
Well, you know, we've been talking, first off, this sounds like a confirmation. Everyone we've been talking about through this show, that this is a cover for this kind of an operation. And I've always thought it's more likely to happen. It's not just a threat. unless they have some rabbit they can pull out of their hat, unless there's something tactically that you and I and Doug McGregor and other people haven't anticipated where this operation can actually succeed and seize whatever piece of ground that they have in mind and then hold on to it without losing a whole lot to a lot of Americans. Yeah, what is the purpose of that? I mean, do they really think that we're going to say we got the Iranians by the neck wherever it is that we grabbed them and that they're now going to capitulate because we've got Harg or some other island?
And by the way, the estimation is either this, I think it's called Qasem, either right here or Harg. Apparently it's one of these two.
Okay, or maybe both. Who knows? Maybe they have both.
God help if it's either one, but if it's both, I mean, then that's the classic worst case scenario where you split your forces, which are already really small, but which means that's probably entirely possible. Well,
but Daniel, I mean, you know the military art much better than I do. These guys are not entirely stupid. I mean, I assume their commanders and the people who plan these operations have something in mind that doesn't turn into Gallipoli. They must have some way they think they can make this work. And maybe we haven't thought of it yet. Maybe there's something they know that we don't know that say, well, but if we do X, this will turn into a great success, and that they found a way to avoid all of the pitfalls, you know, the high ground and all the rest of that that we've discussed. I don't really know the answer to that. I mean, maybe they plan on seizing part of the Iranian coast, on the mainland, across from the island. I really don't know. I don't see how that can work, but I can't believe they would send them in there without some kind of a plan.
You've got more faith in our leadership than I do at this point, because I haven't seen evidence of a good plan so far. So
I'd like to think that the political planners don't have a good plan, but you'd think the people who are planning at the tactical level would have something in mind, knowing what they're facing. I mean,
I used to hope that, and I still do, but I. If this happens at all, there's not a good plan. It's a country of 93 million, for crying out loud. They're well prepared to this. Everybody knows that that's a likely target, and they certainly have known this. They have defenses set up for this. I just don't see what the benefit, even if you succeed, I don't see a gain, but you may well bloodily lose, and we'll have to wait and see how it's going to happen. I don't want to belabor the point, but I really appreciate you coming on today and giving us this clarity, because it's something we need, and we'll all be watching very carefully what may happen this coming weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate you guys too. Be sure and like and subscribe if you haven't, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. Don't forget to tell your friends, the ones that love to listen to podcasts. Get them to add Daniel Davis Deep Dive to their podcast list. They need to know what you know. They can get it to where they already get their podcast. You just got to tell them.